Welcome to Family Talk. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Today, we're going to hear the conclusion of Dr. Meeker's interview with Dr. Linda Mental. Dr. Mental is the chair of the College of Osteopathic Medicine at Liberty University and a licensed marriage and family therapist and a licensed clinical social worker with 30 years of clinical experience. She's also a nationally recognized expert on the psychology of food, weight, and body image, as well as a best-selling author, a national news consultant, and radio host. Last time, she shared lots of useful tips from her new book, We Need to Talk. These tips can help you handle conflict in a way that actually strengthens relationships. So if you missed the broadcast, I urge you to download a copy from our website, drjamesdobson.org. But Dr. Mental has lots more to share, so let's get to the broadcast. Oh, before we get started, I want to let you know this broadcast was recorded at the Conference for the American Association of Christian Counselors, so you'll hear some of that activity in the background. Here now is Dr. Meg Meeker and Dr. Linda Mental on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
One of the things that I see with teenagers, and I love you talking about mother and daughter relationships, is I think a lot of our response to conflict and our response to someone being angry or hurting us or whatever, you know, is ingrained patterns. Like
yes.
You're talking about, you know, you sort of do what you learn. And trying to teach an adult woman that you don't have to respond the way the kid responded.
Right.
That you need to go back and tell her, okay, speak up. Speak up, because so many children who are, and I think Christian kids too, who are taught you need to be gentle, you need to be submissive, you need to be kind, you need to be selfless, you need to serve. In other words, you need to give everything away to another person. And then that person becomes an adult, and now she's in a conflict situation. And you're trying to teach her, stand up, say what you think, and
right.
say what you believe. They don't know how to do that.
Well, and in therapy, we call that, we have a name for that concept, and it's called separate but attached. So we teach our children how to have a separateness, an individual, to be an individual. What is going on in your mind? What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What do you think is the solution to this? What do you want to have happen? They're an individual, but they have that individual stance, but they're also in a relationship. So you have to figure out how to have your own position in a relationship and still be attached to that person.
So that's now you're talking boundaries.
Yeah, so that's the key. Yeah, it's a boundary issue, but it's also understanding that what you bring to the table is going to affect the way that other person responds as well.
Mm.
So I can only be responsible for me. So I check my reaction. Am I angry? Am I so angry that I'm not doing what the Bible says, you know, in terms of dealing with my anger? Is my anger so out of control that nobody can listen to me? I'm responsible for that. So when I learn to have my response be godlike and like Jesus, in terms of I'm speaking the truth, I'm speaking it in love, I'm coming after that person in a way that is not hostile or aggressive, but soft, mm-hmm. and I'm giving a listening ear, I'm also, empathy is a big part of this, mm-hmm. in terms of putting yourself in the position of that person. So like, again, I'm just going to use mothers and daughters as an example. I will say to daughters who get so angry at their moms, just have all this, and she never lets me be myself, and she's always trying to control me, and I just can't do anything myself. I'll start to say, okay, that may all be true from your perspective, but have you ever thought about who your mother is as a woman?
Mm.
And I said, it's kind of like when you take on your camera and you take a little tiny picture with your cell phone, and you take it, and if I was taking a picture of you now, I'd just see you sitting here with a radio microphone. But if I put my panoramic view on, mm-hmm. on my cell phone, suddenly I see where you are. You're in Nashville. You're in a hotel or a conference or wherever you are. I see this bigger picture, and it gives me context. And I try to teach young women, that's why you need to understand who your mother is or who your father is, or same with the kids. What was their life like?
Right.
What family did they grow up in? What were their hardships? Why are they who they are?
There's the empathy.
That develops empathy. You get the panoramic view of that person you're dealing with. And a lot of times I found in my own life when I was dealing with my mother-daughter relationship, that helped me tremendously when I would get into a conflict, because I'd sit there and I'd go, I know what kind of home she grew up in. I know how she was dealt with on this issue and why this issue is hard for her.
And why she does kind of what she does.
Right.
Let's talk about some child, parent-child, adult-child, or mother-daughter, father-son. What do you do as a mother? You and I, are you a grandmother?
Not yet.
Oh, I.
So I have a couple little grandkids. So yeah, I have the opportunity. But your children are adult. You get to see them live their lives.
Right.
Do their jobs, set up their homes. And I'm getting to see, you know, my daughter parent now. What do you do, and I hear from a lot of parents, when they see their adult child living a life that is diametrically opposed to their values, their beliefs, should that parent say something? It's kind of silly because the adult child knows how the parent feels anyway.
Right, right. But, and that's the key, I think.
Yes. But what do they do? What does an adult parent do?
That is a difficult road to navigate. And you have to be so careful when you're the parent, when you're in that situation. Because, yes, I kind of believe they do know that you raised them. You've been very vocal. You've probably had conversations before about what you believe and what you stand for. I think in those situations, just loving them unconditionally goes a long way. Now, there are times, and I've advised clients at times, when, with my own son at times, when he might do something, I'll ask him about it. I'll say, it's interesting. That wasn't a value you grew up with, or that isn't something that we actually did. I know.
That's interesting. You didn't say, I taught you differently than that.
You
said
I can
that
give
was
you an
a
example.
Value you didn't grow up with.
I'll give you an example. One of his best friends was living with a woman.
Yeah.
And these are Christian kids. And I'm like, and my son never said anything. I said, Matt, have you ever had a conversation with your friend about this? Oh, no, I don't want to judge. You know how the generation,
right.
I don't want to judge anything. And I said, well, but he's your friend. Have you ever just talked to him like, what is that for you? What's that about? How do you reconcile what you've been taught with doing this? And again, I think this is helping kids critically think,
yes.
Which I'm finding in medical school is a missing skill for some of our young adults, is that they don't critically think about why they do what they do. So I don't think you directly challenge your child, but what you do is you say, tell me about that. Mm-hmm. Help me understand that. What is it about that? And a lot of times I have found when parents have done that, the young adult or the teenager is kind of going, yeah, I don't know why.
I don't know why.
Maybe I should be doing
you
that.
You start to dig and ask questions. Why? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like getting them to tell you what the motivation is. There's actually a kind of interviewing style in therapy called motivational interviewing, where you're not telling people to change. You don't tell them because it's like you're a doctor. You know how effective it is if you hand somebody a diet and say, I want you to lose weight, take that diet and change.
Just follow it.
They're not going to do it.
Yeah,
they're not going to do it. So what do you do with that patient? You ask that patient, well, tell me how difficult it is to lose weight. What's going on with you? Mm-hmm. Is there any reason that you would see your life differently? Would you want to lose weight? You're asking them these questions that are starting to get them thinking.
Self-reflection.
Yeah, what's mm-hmm. the motivation? And internally, then, they start to find the motivation to change. I think you have to do that with your kids when they get a little bit older, when they get to be teenagers and young adults. You start to ask them questions about why they're doing what they're doing and what did they want to see is in terms of the consequences of
it's
that.
It's wonderful advice because I think that our adult children are learning, and I don't think it's particularly healthy that if they disagree with somebody's lifestyle, position, beliefs, religion, that they hate that person.
I know.
And where did that come from? You know, we used to be able to disagree all the time and have these wonderful sort of debates and then walk away and be friends. But now it's almost, if you disagree with somebody, you automatically hate that.
Yeah.
You hate that person. And I think we really need to untangle that and diffuse that for our kids, because what happens is if they don't do that, they become very narrow thinkers.
Yes. I'm trying to remember if it was G.K. Chesterton who said that tolerance, it had to do with the whole idea of tolerance. I can't remember the quote exactly, but it was like, tolerance is not a man without conviction. So what I tell kids all the time is you have convictions. It's good to have convictions.
Exactly.
You have to have a plumb line. You have to have some place from which, and everybody has them. Everybody has a worldview. Mm-hmm. So what I try to explain is what you're talking about is out of your worldview. And when you run into someone else who doesn't have the same worldview, it's just what you're saying. You should be able to have a conversation about that and say, well, here's where I differ. Here, it's a lost art because
it
of
is
this
a lost
whole
art.
Silencing thing
I
of political
I
correctness.
Remember in college having very
yes.
spirited debates and loving it. And the other person was loving it. And I was actually on a debate team. But it was fun because I liked to hear what they had to say and they liked to hear what I had to say. And there wasn't any animosity or hostility. It was just a sharing of, okay, can you think a little deeper on that issue and prove to me that you're right, or can I think a little deeper mm-hmm. on my issue? But now it's if you're passionate and you have a belief system and you try to even articulate that in a very calm manner, you're a mean person, you're a horrible person.
You're a hate person. Or
let's just talk a little bit about parenting teenagers and adult children, because I get a lot of questions. I get a lot of questions on that, and I think there's a positive, some information. Everybody wants to learn how to parent their 8 and under. Because they're easy. Because they can hug them. But once they get in that ugly
stage. You can still
hug
your teenager.
Yeah.
Just not in public.
Exactly. Not in public, but it's kind of hard. Are there ever situations where you have such a great conflict with an adult child or a teen where you say, that's it, you're living in such a way or doing something that I don't agree with, so I cut you off?
I would not advocate that. I really wouldn't. And I've had a lot of call-ins on radio shows about that situation. I say, you have to be the one who constantly extends the olive branch mm-hmm. to your child. The worst thing for a child is to feel like they're not unconditionally loved. And certainly that is the model that Jesus left us. Loving somebody doesn't mean that you agree with everything they're doing. And when kids don't feel like they're loved, no matter what, mm-hmm. now they know, again, they know that they're doing things that are not lining up with you. Mm-hmm. But I might say, it's difficult for me to be around this, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to stay real long. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to the house of a child and there's drugs or there's alcohol or there's something going on that I would not approve of, I might say, you know, I'm not going to stay, or I'm not going to be in there, or let's meet in public, or let's do something else. I might set some boundaries on that, mm-hmm. but I would never advocate cutting off, mm-hmm. because cut off doesn't teach you anything.
Right.
It just teaches you when you're in the middle of a terrible conflict, you run. Mm-hmm. And that's not a life skill for mm-hmm. anything that we want to teach our kids. And again, it's not a biblical thing, because Jesus talked about loving your enemies. He talked about blessing those who curse you. He talked about praying for those who despitefully use you. So maybe what you do is you just listen to that teen or that mm-hmm. young adult, and you just love on them. You're not affirming. It doesn't mean that you're affirming what they're doing to love them. But I've heard too many people years later whose parents cut them off and say, I couldn't deal with that rejection. It was just too much.
The child.
But then I've also heard from children when they get on the other side of that say, my mother or my father still had communication with me, still loved me. I knew I was doing wrong things. Mm. But because they kept that connection, I was able to come back home.
You know, it's really hard, because I think that parents of teens and young adults are facing issues that, you know, we didn't face 10, right. 15, 20 years ago. And so is it possible for a parent to love a child and stay connected to that child, but say to that child, I disagree with what you're doing? Now sure. the adult child may say, then you don't love me. What does a parent say?
You can say, it's not tied to that. I'm disagreeing with some lifestyle thing that you're doing.
But I love you.
Yeah, but I love you anyway. It doesn't mean I'm going to embrace everything. I mean, I think on a real experiential level, kids get that. Mm-hmm. They get that. They're just trying to get you to affirm what they're doing.
Yes.
Because the other thing that we always want is validation.
Yes.
And acceptance. And so you might not get the acceptance from me, but you will get the love from me. Mm-hmm. And so what I would say to that child is that you'll always have my love. You might not have my acceptance. You might not have me validating those behaviors, but I'm never going to stop loving you. Mm-hmm.
And that means I'm always going to stay involved in your
right.
life.
Yeah. I'm going to at least have some communication with you. And sometimes if it's really difficult stuff, because I've treated a lot of people with drug usage and horrible behaviors, and they come to the parents' house and they steal from them, you still may have to set boundaries on your kids. Mm-hmm. And you can say, I will. Like you can say, I will have a conversation with you when you're not screaming at me. Mm-hmm. Or I will come to the house if you're not going to be verbally abusive. Or when that begins to happen, I'm going to leave. Mm-hmm. So you can set those things up ahead of time so that you know what the issue is. When it starts to go south, you say ahead of time, if it goes this direction, I'm not going to be there. Yeah.
A junior in college student comes home to your home and to live for a few weeks for a vacation and starts doing awful things, starts mm-hmm. using drugs in your home. So what does a parent do? Do we have the right to sort of say, this is my home, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do? If you want to do that, then you have to go out there.
I think we do. I think we have the right to set those boundaries and say, this is our place, and to respect us. You know, and I do see kids who do that, who will come back and they won't bring their girlfriends home, and they won't be smoking or doing drugs or something that they could do if they did. And it's a respect of your parent. And again, what does the scripture say about that? Honor your mother and father. So that's part of the honoring. And I would frame it that way to a child, that yes. to honor me, I'm not telling you how to live your life, but I'm just saying when you're in my home, please honor me. And I know that sounds real old school. But
it doesn't matter, because that's, yeah. but we have to set that up for children and say, we deserve your honor. Yeah. We're not perfect parents and we've made a lot of mistakes, but we deserve your honor. Biggest mistake people make in resolving conflict?
I think to think that all conflict is resolvable might be one. It's interesting, in the marital research literature, 69% of all marital conflict never gets resolved. People fight about the same issues over and over and over. So it isn't whether it gets resolved or it doesn't get resolved. It's how you do the conflict mm-hmm. that matters, how you're handling that conflict. If you're staying friends in the process, if you're speaking kind words, if you're approaching it gently, if you're working through the differences as best you can, at the end of that, you might say, you know what? We just agree to disagree. Mm-hmm.
Can you have a strong and good and healthy marriage relationship or relationship with an adult child and have a large disagreement where you just can't, where you just have to agree to disagree?
Well, if you look at what the foundation of conflict is, that where you can work through conflict or you can actually have those disagreements civilly, you have to have trust. So what I would say is at the bottom of that relationship, if a child or a parent knows that your yes is yes, your no is no, that you're going to do what you say, that you're not going to keep secrets, that you're going to be honest about what's going on, then that trust relationship can really set the stage for that disagreement. Mm-hmm. You know, there maybe is a cavern or a big disagreement on something, but as long as you say, there it is, that's our disagreement, but in the meantime, we're going to love each other because we trust each other and we know that this isn't going to break up the relationship. So many relationships don't have that foundation of trust.
Yeah.
And then that's what makes everything kind of go south, is because there's no basis for which to say, I can depend on these people, I can mm-hmm. trust these people, mm-hmm. even if we don't agree.
Would you say that most marriage relationships dissolve because they can't resolve conflict, or because they don't try, or because they don't trust? Or because I'm not a counselor, and you know, I don't deal with a lot of married couples, but I always perceive that, well, they just have conflict, they can't resolve it, and that's why.
It's the biggest myth.
Really?
Because when you ask people what they fight over, it's basically nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's not the disagreement, because that is not the thing. It is the loss of the foundation of trust, this loss of a friendship and trust where you really know your partner, you lose track of who that person is. Mm-hmm. And then it's the escalation of conflict that leads to divorce. So the number one predictor of divorce is emotional distance in a relationship. Mm. So when you don't have that emotional connection with that person, and then you start to deal with differences, and it escalates from that criticism to that defensiveness to that contemptuous feeling toward that person, and then to the stonewalling. And what is stonewalling? Stonewalling is where we put up the wall and we're like, we're done. That's emotional distance. So that process that gets you there, that escalates the conflict from mild to intense, is that criticism, defensiveness, contemptuousness to stonewalling, and then people are done and they're out. They're emotionally disconnected. They don't want anything to do with each other. And the relationship is what we call completely negative. So even when the relationship has gone so negative with that escalation, mm-hmm. what happens is even when there's positive things said in a relationship, they're dismissed. Right. They don't hear it because there's what we call a negative override. It has taken over the relationship. And you've got to go back to the very basics again with the spiritual foundation, developing the friendship, getting people connected again in non-conflict times, as well as then in conflict, down-regulating that escalation process that goes on. You've got to stop that from getting there. And marriages, relationships that don't work, have high degrees of contemptuous talk in them. Mm. And not even talk, but the rolling of the eyes, the whatever, mm-hmm. okay, yeah, those are contemptuous remarks. Healthy relationships don't have that. Mm-hmm. They don't have that.
They have the respect, do you think?
Yeah, well, yeah. They don't have that. They have an absence of the negative. So when you look at a healthy relationship, there's 5 positives to every 1 negative. Mm-hmm. When you look at problematic relationships, there's 0.08 positives to every 1 negative. It's bad. It's not even a one-on-one. And even the brain, a one-on-one, if you give every positive for every negative, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. The brain needs more of the positive to override this negative bias that we have in the brain.
What a toxic way to live.
Yeah.
A very toxic way to live in a situation.
So keeping the escalation of conflict down, way important, and then not getting to that point of emotional distance. That'll prevent problems.
This is a big topic, but I asked early on what you do with people who are constantly stirring the pot. Mm-hmm. And they're conflict lovers.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes.
They're tough people to live with. How do you handle somebody like that? Because everybody knows one.
Yeah, and that's actually a chapter in the book. It's called Dealing with Difficult People. Conflict people, right? Because we all have them in our lives. We actually might be one, if we're honest. Maybe one of us is one.
Do they know they are that way?
No. Well, here's the thing. Conflict is seen very differently with people like that. So it isn't about the issue. It's about the person. So conflict is looked at as a personal assault. It's something you're doing to me.
Okay.
And they have these long ingrained patterns where they won't listen. It's almost like there's a blindness. They're blinded to the pattern. And so they blame, they create drama, they manipulate, they do everything possible. And so I've got, I think it's like 20 strategies.
Is that personality disorder?
Yeah, it can be. It can be a personality disorder. Sometimes it's just people that are very, very high on the difficulty factor, you know, but we know that with personality disorder people that you really have these patterns that are ingrained. So there's a number of strategies. We don't want to tell the person. First of all, you don't want to say, you're a difficult person. You're probably a personality disorder. So that's the first thing, because I'll tell you, people call in to my radio show and they go, well, I told them they have a personality disorder. That is not going to help. Do not
exactly,
do that.
Yeah.
Do not do that. But here's where you really have to stay calm. Because the high conflict person wants to engage you in the battle, because the battle is all the fun.
Ah, so if for
you,
them.
Yeah. So if you don't bite and you stay there, and then you have to choose your battles with somebody like that, because you don't want to pick on every little thing, because it's just going to be drama after drama after drama, and it's exhausting.
Yes.
In those relationships. So what I tell is that you have to be the one to keep calm. You cannot engage tit for tat in the emotional level that they're at. And again, staying calm throws people.
It's hard because it's almost like a vacuum cleaner comes at you and they're trying to go,
and you're going, sucking you in.
No, no.
But you have to do that. You have to do that. And then they bring in allies. They bring in, well, then my mom said, and they're trying to get all these people to be on their side. And you just, and it's tempting to go, well, wait, I have my allies over here. But don't do that. Don't do that with them, because that's going to get you in there. And what I do with those people is I try to say, here are the elements of a healthy relationship. Let's see if we can pick those out, which we can't find too many of them usually. Mm-hmm. But mostly the key there is to choose your battles with a person like that and to stay calm and not mirror their reaction. Remember, there's an old detective show. I'm even not old enough for this. But he used to say, just the facts. Ma'am, just the facts.
Yeah.
That's what you do with a high conflict person. You just stick to the facts. They're going to try to throw you off. They're going to manipulate. They're going to say all kinds of things to emotionally get you aroused. If you can just be that broken record again and just go with the facts. So they're doing all this high drama and you go, well, the issue here was this.
Exactly.
And you just keep repeating, the issue here was this.
Yeah.
And you don't get into all that emotional, but the pull is there. And it's hard to do, but you stick to the facts and you'll be okay.
Yeah. Linda, this has been amazing. I could talk to you
for five, six
more shows, I tell you. You know,
well, it's a big deal for people with conflict.
It's a huge deal.
We all need the help. We all need the help on how to do this right.
We do. I always joke that I've been married almost 35 years. The first 10 years of our marriage, I figured out what my husband needed to change. The next 10 years, I tried to change it. And then in the third decade, I said, oh, forget it. And that's when we really started to get along.
Yeah.
Because I realized, you say, we have the same fights over and over. I can't tell you what they are.
I know.
But
it's not about the issue.
It's not about the issue.
That's right.
My guest is Dr. Linda Mental, and her book is We Need to Talk, How to Successfully Navigate Conflict. And this is a resource that everybody, mother, dad, child, aunt, uncle, grandparent, anybody with any kind of personality, all different personality, needs to read, because conflict comes to everyone and we need the skills to handle it. So thanks so much for being my guest.
Thanks so much for having me, Meg. Yeah. It's always a delight to see you.
Yeah, you too.
You've been listening to the conclusion of Dr. Meeker's interview with Dr. Linda Mental on Family Talk. Dr. Mental has shared so many useful tips in these 2 days, but there's still more in her book, We Need to Talk, How to Successfully Navigate Conflict. This is a powerful tool for helping you effectively engage with others, and I urge you to get a copy. You can find a link to the book on our website, drjamesdobson.org. You can also listen to this interview again or find out more about Dr. Linda Mental's radio show and blog. And while you're on our website, I encourage you to check out the many resources we offer to help you strengthen your most important relationships. And be sure to join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.